When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today we're covering Season 5, Episode 7, Gotron, Jerry Sis, Rick Vangelion.
Here's Aaron with the recap.
En route to Boob World for a getaway with the kids, Rick discovers the final missing piece from a lifelong ambition, the blue ferret from a complete Gotron set. Rick drops literally everything to commandeer his family to become giant robot ferret pilots, defeating giant alien kaiju across the galaxy. But Rick being Rick, that's not enough, and as Summer begins helping Rick create a dimensionally sprawling Gotron protection racket, Morty feels displaced within the family. How many levels of Gotron will Rick manage to achieve? And will Summer wrest the family's narrative control from Morty? Okay, Jim, what did you think of Gotron, Jerry Sis, Rick Vangelion?
Good job pronouncing that on first try. That's a tough one. This episode is a mouthful of a title. Yeah, me too.
It really is.
In the mirror
really
before I woke up this morning.
You have a bed mirror?
Yeah.
How do you get a bed mirror?
It's on the ceiling. It's what I do cocaine off of when I get really high.
Damn, I
thought this episode sucked. This is maybe the first episode of the season I've actively disliked. The others I was kind of meh on, or some of the others I was meh on, some of them I like. This one, man, were there jokes in this one? I was consistently disappointed by this episode because I kept expecting it to go down that Rick and Morty hole with the Voltron stuff. And it just never does. And like, they just straight up do a Voltron sequence, right? Like the connecting sequence. Mm-hmm. They straight up do it. They don't put any jokes in there. There's like a joke where Morty comes out of a parking garage, but that's like it. Other than that, it's just, this is Voltron. Ha, isn't that funny, guys? The Voltron, remember that? That's funny, right? No, references aren't funny in and of themselves. You got to do something with it. And Rick and Morty usually does. This episode did not. It didn't even try. It just felt lazy.
I think that I share some of your criticisms of how they handled the Gotron, you know, idea and license. But I like it. Full disclosure, a lot of times I watch Rick and Morty on the off season. And one of the things my wife and I got especially tickled in our rewatches of last season was the Vat of Acid episode, mm-hmm. where you had the alien mobsters doing all the Gabagool and Amarone. Plus, we have been watching last year. We watched so many gangster movies, and it was like Cecily's first experience with gangster movies. You know, first time she'd seen Goodfellas. I kind of got like a fresh and I also watched all of like Sopranos. What I'm saying is, like, last year, I fucking dipped myself in the Gabagool. I swam in it. And maybe that's why I found it funny, but because the other thing is, like, someone in our Discord pointed out that this is just pretty much a straight up remake of the classic season one Community episode, also by Dan Harmon. The one where Jeff and Abed manage to take over the kitchen, wrest control of it from Starburns, and then start running a chicken finger racket. Just the same way, where you've got a character of phenomenal kind of intelligence and a skewed outlook on life. Abed and this Rick and this get like obsessed with the idea, and it goes spirals out of control and goes Henry from Goodfellas, you know, they get high on their own supply and it all falls to shit. So like, is that lazy or is that cool to see a creator take a concept from one show and punch it up with sci-fi interdimensionality? And a different family dynamic. I mean, I guess I didn't find that lame. So I like the gangster stuff. The Gotron stuff is a little bit silly. I thought the incest baby stuff, that stuff lands pretty flat. But yeah. I was thinking, like, how much of I just think of how unfair it is to be Rick and Morty in season five, because like if you go back and watch like a season one or season two show where they're doing like parodies of the Bartman dance and stuff like that, could come across really desperate and grasping and and lame and unfunny. But for some reason, people just like, oh, my God, look at the confidence of doing a full Bartman in season one and just like shitting on the idea and lampooning it. But now they do stuff and it's just like, yeah, we've seen it. I don't know. It seems because there's this thread in the subreddit of Rick and Morty where people are speculating that this was an extra fuck you to the fans because they knew that the space incest baby was going to bomb. Or some people postulated their animation is so sophisticated and slick that they can South Park-esque turn around and like, oh, they hated the incest baby. Let's double down on the incest baby 3 episodes from now. I mean, no, the fact is this thing leaked, I think, right after the incest baby accidentally proves that it's not. Mm-hmm. I think that they actually thought the opposite, that the incest baby was going to slay, and that the callback to the incest baby wearing like an Apollo Creed diaper out of the American flag and kicking Gotron's ass was going to just be hilarious. And they just miscalculated.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the possibility that like in the writer's room, there was a debate about the incest baby. And this is like some of the writers poking fun at other writers and them poking fun at themselves. And
right. And it gets out of hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like an incest baby.
Like
does.
Somebody in the room probably stood up and said, hey, they're probably going to hate this incest baby stuff, or I don't like this incest baby stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the next episode they go to write and they're like, you know, let's take that and run with it. That's fine. I didn't hate the incest baby stuff. It was fine, but it did kind of fall flat. The mafia stuff is clearly the best part of this episode. It's just especially when I learned, I felt it was really lazy when I learned that not only was this a community episode, essentially beat for beat, but this was also beat for beat, the kind of mashup that Rob Schraub had done in a comic book in like 1996. This entire episode is recycled shit from other shows and other mediums that they just like, that makes me feel like he is just. The entire writer's room. I'm not talking about Dan or Rob Schraub in particular.
Yeah.
But they're just like leaning on shit they've already done to make this new thing that isn't actually any good. It's not funny.
Does like,
there's a reason Rob
Schraub
is not famous for La Cosa Nostroid, right?
He's
not famous for that. That didn't go anywhere because probably it sucked. I don't know. I haven't read it, but this sucked.
I feel like Scud the Disposable Assassin has some cult cred nowadays, but to your point, it's like, does that make me like it less or more to know that the Community Chicken Fingers episode was a lazy remake of Cosa Nostroid? And then like, did Rob Schraub like complete the circle by ripping off Community to put it back in the Rick and Morty?
I don't know if La Cosa Nostroid has anything to do with the Chicken Fingers episode. I'm just talking about this episode is.
There's
like
no fucking
off.
Way it didn't. There's no fucking way that Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub, who've been attached at the hip since Dan was like literally 18 years old. There's no fucking way that like he didn't mind the seminal work of his writer partner. No, yeah, I'll take the brave stand that, yeah, Dan probably heavily ripped off Cosa Nostroid for that concept. But on the other hand, I could see Dan angrily saying like, oh, parody the Goodfellas. Oh, what an original fucking concept. No one can if a robot does it once, you can't do it in a community college, and if it's unique, but you can't do it in an interdimensional mad scientist. And of course, he's right. And the answer to that is he's got to do it good. And, you know, results are in on the incest baby. It's bad. People don't like it. Needs to go away. Maybe it comes back in season 9 and it's so bad it's good kind of thing. But like, yeah, I'm not eager to see it come out. To play.
Yeah. I'm not either. Other weird thing about this episode to me was Rick doesn't feel like Rick very much in this episode, and I don't know if they needed to have Rick act a certain way to get to make the connection between this anime shit that they're doing and this mafia shit that they're doing to try and bridge that gap, because that feels very awkward. They feel like, you know, ice cream and lamp oil, they just don't fucking go together, right? Like, there's nothing inherently interesting about combining those two things. So they have to force it. And Rick, at some point, the thing that like turned me on Rick and his character in this episode is when Morty is like, they all come back from this big Voltron thing and they're all high and love and life. And Morty's like, well, you know, Rick, what I told you about enough. And Rick's like, yeah, enough is enough. And he's ready to put the whole fucking thing down. That's not Rick. The Summer doesn't need to come in and give Rick a pep talk to take it to the next level. I felt like there was a fundamental problem with the character in this episode.
I felt like that they're maybe doing some character work there, because like we've noticed that like Rick has been more sober this episode or this season, or something that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, less vomit on his mouth, less conspicuous drinking and belching and just kind of like that kind of drunken lap behavior. This episode is a harsh reversal into the other direction. I think what you're supposed to understand is like Morty has started to moderate Grandpa like a deuterium rod. You know, like when the Rick mass starts to go super critical, Morty inserts the like, you remember what you said that sometimes enough is enough.
And like I'm uncomfortable talking about a grandson inserting into his grandfather. I don't
well,
like
Well, it's Rick and Morty now. So this is a weekly conversation topic. He's inserting his rods into his grandpa and cooling him down. And I think that Summer, who is fairly new to the adventures, doesn't understand the Rick, you know, excitement, adventure, shame cycle that she's about to kick off.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, but you are also onto something.
But
this is
at the beginning
and out
boob world, right? Like the contrast here is the boob world stuff, because they start off with them just fucking railroading Morty into boob world, and then it's a resounding success with the Voltron stuff, and then Rick comes back and says, "Okay, you're right. Enough is enough." That doesn't. I don't know. There's an inconsistency there in his character.
I also want to go back to what you said. There is an uneasy amalgamation of like the plots of Casino, Goodfellas, mm-hmm. Godfather, and Scarface that don't quite work, because like simultaneously, I think Morty is Henry Hill from Goodfellas, and also whoever the fuck De Niro was in Casino. Mm-hmm. But Rick's also Henry Hill and Tony Montoya. Like combined into one, and it's like there's something about all those through lines not quite, you know, meshing, like those characterizations and stuff not quite met. Because also I think you're supposed to understand that Morty's also a little Michael Corleone. He's like the real like stable leader of the foot, and like some of that stuff I think didn't quite land, because you never quite knew which part of which movie they were trying to like pull on. It's more like just like a really Scorsese, you know, pastiche, which is fine. But sure. I think that's another reason that people kind of like, what the fuck is this? This is a weird amalgamation. This is lead and clay trying to cling together.
Yeah. And then I was trying to tell if like the Sunny stand in, you know, Hothead Rick was supposed to also be Henry Hill.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
It's weird when you get all the Godfather, all the mafia movies in the one thing.
Right.
Shall we move on to maybe take a quick break and move on to discussion of the full episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
I want to open up the discussion with Boob World, since we kind of like went really meta really early. Just to say that I'm super tickled, because like I came from a working class family that really had to scrimp and save to take up vacations. And I remember the saving a Coke can so you can get $4 off.
Hell yeah.
Or going Six Flags Kroger. Or Kentucky Kingdom and shit like that. I feel like that's something that only working class people, because like if your dad was a lawyer, like did you guys save up cans on the kitchen counter until you had enough for the whole family to yeah. I didn't think so, but I thought that was really funny. She's like, what, am I just a Coke can? Like, no, because you can throw away a Coke can at the gates when you don't need right. it anymore. That
doesn't
shit
become
was
baggage.
Really funny. I thought that was funny. I also like it provoking the choice between like this 14-year-old boy trying to, with a metaphoric gun to his head, think of anything that's more important than going to Boob World, you know, and Rick like constantly interrupting him. And then when Morty complains, like, you said you'd let me make a choice. He goes, I did. The choice was to break my heart or not. That felt like that's classic Rick.
That
right
felt
there.
Like Rick. Yeah, for sure.
What do you think of the voiceovers? Because I thought the voiceovers were both a required part of any Scorsese parody, and also, since they've never been a part of Rick and Morty before, requiring some kind of explanation. And I thought the voiceoverians were pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, the resolution to that wasn't bad. It was a little jarring when it first happened. I'm like, what show am I watching? This is not a thing they've ever done, right? Even in like the episode with fucking Cop Morty and, you know, the cookies. I don't even remember the name of that episode, but that one, I was trying to think, did they do voiceover in that? And I don't think they did. They did like a noir type thing, but it was always like Morty just talking in a noir voice.
Yeah. And then I can think of some, like when Rick did like some of his double cross scheming heist stuff, there was like what you would almost call a voiceover, but it's him just narrating what, you know, the, you know, his Ocean's 11 kind of plan thing.
Yeah.
So I thought it was good. And like the early hints of it not being like what it, like, you know, the Morty can hear the voiceover and that's, you know, like, well, I'm Morty's voiceover. I'm Summer's voiceover. I can't hear Summer. I can only, and he's like, well, what's the difference? He goes, well, wouldn't it be telepathy, stupid. Like there's this funny thing that doesn't really make sense on the first time through, but then on the second time through, it I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But we quickly lead to, I think, one of your biggest problems of the episode, which is once we get the ferret assembled and we're in the Gotron uniforms, it's just Voltron. Like, yeah. You're right. The lone subversion is, there's two subversions. One, instead of tigers, we're using ferrets.
Which, it's a chuckle when you first see it.
Because yeah, like the ferrets, kind of like the way they run instead of like charging like lions, the claws are kind of like bouncing and flowing over the landscape. That's funny. But like when they are in Voltron, they just look like fucking Voltron.
They're just
honestly
Voltron. I was waiting. I was like, man, what are they going to turn into? What are they going to turn into? This is going to be cool, right? And then it was just Voltron, and I was so disappointed.
And there's the other thing is Morty, as you mentioned, everybody has like this epic sequence. Like Jerry is in a volcano. Beth erupts from an ocean trench, or Summer does from a erupts from a mountaintop. Rick leaps from a jungle like towering waterfall, and Morty crawls out of this cramped parking lot garage, which I thought was hilarious, especially when it went interdimensional. And you just had like 10 Verits bursting out of a volcano, and you see like the massive traffic backup at the you know, the yellow ferret state holding pin. I thought that stuff was really funny. But you're right. It's just them saying how cool Voltron was. And it was kind of cool the first time they assembled Voltron and they got the sword. And, you know, Rick kind of parodying the conventions of it, like Beth is like, why are we attacking one by one? Isn't this the best way? And he's like, to kick off a ridiculously cool sequence. That stuff I thought was funny.
But then here's it didn't kick off anything cool. It kicked off the same thing that we've seen in every single Voltron episode ever, you know?
And when they started going like, I'm going to make a Gotron of Gotrons, I thought that was a funny idea. But like visually, it was really lame. Yeah. Like I was shocked when I just saw that, like, OK, I'm expecting like five Gotrons to go together. And now his arms and legs are going to be recognizably Gotron. And like, I wonder how that's going to work and all that. But they just, if you freeze frame on the animation, they just are essentially running a morph on it, where you've got a Gotron and it slowly morphs into the blue ferret arm or whatever.
And no, like Transformer type action where it, you know, pieces out and things open and other things close.
But it's like it. No, because the animation happens very fast and it just be. And I just thought that was a much less interesting. But then when they go like to the three, they bring it back to the idea that these are made of constituent ferrets. And I thought that was clever. Like when they have the threefold Gotron and it's fighting against itself as it's taking damage, part of the debris is just free flowing ferrets twisting in space and stuff, like it's being knocked into its constituent ferrets. But like the fucking model doesn't look anything like that. So I was disappointed in how I've seen these animators go for fucking broke on shit. And maybe they thought like we were going to be nostalgic for Voltron and like seeing it, but shit, they just remade Voltron. Like my son and I watched it like 2 years ago, and I don't know. It felt that felt lazy to me. That like, okay, this idea of a Gotron is cool, but the Gotron was dumb. So like every version of that's just going to be a bigger Gotron, and then it gets trumped by an even larger space baby. So, whatever. Also, another thing lame, Summer calls this a Rickpublic, when clearly a Ricktatorship is what she meant to say. Obviously. Rick's not taking votes here. This isn't a democracy. This isn't a representational democracy. They're the five families aren't sending, you know, if that was true, Yo-Yo Rick would have equal say amongst the Ricks. And we know that's not the case because he's complaining about being marginalized inside the episode. But maybe shouldn't have killed that Senator Hooker.
I was going to say, how do you think he fucked up with that that situation?
I thought that guy looked exactly like the Nevada senator who killed the hooker in Godfather 2. So I thought it was kind of like them funny that, like, you know, what Yo-Yo Rick is really into is Nevada senators.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees them as moral worth to hookers in a gangster movie. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I didn't notice the resemblance, so I didn't get it.
But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that's that lazy transformation. But like I thought some of the intersection of this Gotron protection racket, the way it intersected a Smith family, was pretty funny. For example, you know, when Morty is complaining about being constantly demoted by Summer, like Summer's becoming the head of Rick's right arm. And Morty is the left foot of the left foot. I thought
only
that stuff and
an asshole. Yeah.
Yeah. Only because Gotron doesn't have an asshole. I thought that, and then Summer coming in is like, oh, it actually does. It's you. I thought that was actually really funny.
Yeah, that was a good line. Here's the thing about that plot line with Summer and Morty in this episode. I think this is the most like continuity they've had this season. Because this has been the story, right? Where Summer has been going on more of Grandpa's adventures, and Morty has been taking the harder line and refusing to. And so, you know, loyalties and allegiances are transferring here from Morty to Summer. And I don't know, devoid of like the Henry Hill casino, whatever vibes that you get from this episode, this would have been, it could have been like more impressive or more like definitive. Right. But I don't know what to make of this transfer of affection or loyalty in the context of this episode, because I don't know if they're just going for the Goodfellas casino thing, or if they're actually trying to do something with Morty and Summer here. I think it's the latter, and I hope it's the latter, but it's impossible to tell until we get another couple episodes, I think.
Well, the other thing is, like, I feel like they're fucking up the established lore a little bit, because Summer was, and maybe this is because the episodes aired slightly out of order, Summer was kicking against the goad during the incest baby episode, whereas like when she's, you know, doing her kind of like word salad at the end about like why she did this, like the through line is, I decided to seek out the incest baby because, you know, I don't know, she has some vestigial mother instincts or something. But she found out the government is trying to keep it secret and teach it to be a super weapon. And she instead taught it to love. I mean, this is essentially season two of The Boys. And she says, but like the government is going to eventually, this is, people are going to find out. And once we do, we're going to be like on the run from the government. And you and Dad have each other and Rick has Morty, but I have nobody. So I was trying to like make sure that we'd all stay together. But the thing is like, this feels like a fucking emotional paradox, because the events that she says sat in motion of her trying to wrest control of the family seem to be already going before the inciting event. Mm. So it's possible that, number one, I'm doing way too much emotional analysis on a stupid cartoon about incest, giant incest
in an episode that is just parodying the other, you know, crime dramas.
Right. So she could be playing like emotionally flighty, like Karen, you know, Henry's like, she could be like a stand in for that, you know, the way she would kind of like alternate between being hard gangster wife and kind of like sobbing and stuff. Or it could be, but like, I feel like that stuff, even within a parody, some of this stuff has to be true. Like, for example, I think they're telling a story of the Smiths starting to cohese without Rick being at the nucleus. Like, they're all of their own free will talking about, like, you know, Rick's got himself in this problem with these anime kids and they're going to kill him. And the whole family's like, fuck Rick. But like, Morty is being the leader and even building bridges to Summer by citing her leadership and saying, you know, you don't get to choose the family, just the family you got. And if all that stuff is to be character development, then it has to stick from with outside the fiction of the Goodfellas joke. Right.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. It bothered me that I felt like, but that's the other thing is like, this is goes like Summer trying to, I don't know, like Summer's been trying to, I don't want to say a horn in, but become more part of the adventures ever since like the season three premiere. Right. Wasn't that the one was the Mad Max?
Yeah, it was a while
ago.
The
blonde mustache and the fan, like she's been a part and becoming more and more. And like this season's been literally about her kind of trying to muscle in on Morty. So I thought it was weird that they kind of fucked up the cause and effect on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the anime kids, because that's the other lampooning. And usually when Rick and Morty lampoon something, they have like they kind of explain it and like maybe take a stab at appreciating it before they then skewer it and like eviscerate it and leave it bared open for everybody. But here it's kind of like anime is stupid and
they let them
dumb.
Skewer themselves. Right. With just portraying anime inside a different genre.
Yeah but I don't know, because like I still anime is not my favorite thing, but I have liked anime series, you know. I've liked Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo, Full Metal Alchemist, several. But what I've come to appreciate about anime is like it's just a different like style of animation, like in the same way that like we have cartoons where the convention is a cartoon cat will chase a mouse and they shoot each other in the face and grievously wound and kill each other, but they're fine, right? Like, that's just like, if you came outside of understanding of our culture and you watch this cartoon, you're like, my God, this is violent psychopaths. It's itchy and scratchy, right? Well, like, anime's thing is that they try to express emotion through like super extremes. You know, like, if a character is sad, giant goldfish sized teardrops are going to be flying out of their chibi faces. If they are falling in love with somebody, their nose is going to bleed. It's kind of like, so like, why is that a, you know, a stupider? And then you criticize essentially the globalization of the market. So like, you know, when we're watching anime, it's dubbed over. This wasn't like an artistic choice. It's not like the Japanese director is like, oh yeah, this guy fumbling his lines and doing the weird grunting and stuff. That's them trying to kind of translate the Japanese aesthetic to ours.
It's an economic necessity, not an artistic choice.
And I was waiting for someone to kind of articulate that to show that, like, you know, this isn't just a knee jerk reaction to anime bad, but it just never fucking happened. It was like, look at these fucking weird anime characters grunting and groaning and all that kind of shit. Like I said, that's not my favorite thing about anime, but like, I kind of thought they would do something to explain, you know, because that's even funnier. If like some, like, if more, like, if Jerry were to come on and be like, oh, actually, you know, that the, and then like, you know, Rick says, shut up, fucking, you know, what's the weeb? Shut up, weeb. Sure. Then that's like even in a funnier part of the joke, but they didn't. It's a first aid joke that didn't really take off.
Yeah. I'm with
also,
you.
The appropriation joke. The fuck? Like, I've seen some lazy cultural appropriation jokes, but this is literally just saying the words cultural appropriation without making a joke about it.
I'm telling you, this whole episode is jokes that aren't jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The mafia another episode the best part, but
another episode of Morty calmly and efficiently murdering people.
Okay.
In service of his family. I think that's another theme that Morty is starting to become more Rick-like in that way. Why do we make a Jerry? When they get fired, you know, Morty gets fired, the family turns his back on him, give him 16,000, and then he's left bereft. The exact same, but he's like, I'm not sweating because I just know I've been on this airplane, I know how much runway it's got, and it's not going to be enough. So he kind of waits at home until his family shows up and the parents have been fired. There's an interesting conversation between Beth and Jerry about murdering, clipping Summer. And Jerry cites you can do it because you brought her into the world. Like, I don't know. This is the Simpson, Homer Simpsification of Jerry. Like, Jerry's not this fucking stupid.
Yeah, how stupid can you be and still function in any way in our society? I don't know. I didn't have big problems with like Jerry's character. I was, there's a moment where Jerry and Rick interact, a couple of them actually, and one of them is like during the Gotron transformation sequence, or I guess when they're all meeting up. You know, he's complaining about Hawaii and having to go back and forth. But then he like kind of just asks Rick to explain something, and Rick explains it, and Jerry thanks him. And there's no insults. There's nothing funny about it that happens. It's just wholesome Rick.
What are you referring to?
I can't remember exactly what he's explaining to Jerry. Okay. But, Rick just explains it to him like he were a human being that Rick actually respected. And that was strange to me because normally
that is
Jerry would be shut down. Like, I think of him, you know, riding in the cars asking about the hunt me guy, right? And Rick's like, shut up, you fucking idiot. This is your question, you dipshit. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Fuck you. Here he like lovingly explains the scenario. It just doesn't. Nothing vibed in this episode with everything I know about Rick and Morty. It just felt off in many ways.
Let me ask you this. While we're talking about this is discongruity between the characterizations. Where are you thinking? Where are you in thinking that like they might be doing something really clever with like the clones and dimensionality, and they're going to reveal that? Like at this point, my prediction was if they ever do that at the end, it better be the best fucking joke of all time. Because like if it's anything less than that, I don't think you're going to win back a lot of these people that are claiming, I think this is, you know, facetious, but like saying this is like the worst episode. This is the worst season of Rick and Morty, which it might be. But it's not like, you know, the other Rick and Morty's are 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. Season 4 is 9 out of 10. And this is like 0 out of 10.
Every show has a worst season. I hate to break it to people.
Sure. Yeah. Even Breaking Bad, even The Wire. Mm-hmm. Especially Game of Thrones.
Every show has a best season, too. So.
Right. You hopefully the best seasons are towards the end as the show starts clicking on all cylinders and you get in the satisfying conclusion. But the thing is there's like, you know, we talk about how Harmon really loves the episodic television model. Mm-hmm. The narrative television model is the one, I just use it wrong. The procedural. He likes the procedural model. The episodic model is the one to get stronger and stronger and stronger as you're familiar with more and more of the characters and more of the plot. And you're more and more invested until you get a resolution, where episodic tends to be the things that like starts clicking when the character engines get strong in the middle seasons and then fades off fast when they just run out of procedurally generated narrative terrain for the characters to traverse. There's no point for them to be other than to be, and the wheels kind of fall off. And I wonder if we're talking a 10 season run of Rick and Morty, if they're going to fall afoul of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm loath to make predictions at this point because last week you asked me about the incest baby. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not coming back. That just seems like a one-off thing. And boom, here we are, episode 7, full-on Naruto incest baby. So,
oh my god, it's called Naruto too.
Yeah,
what the fuck,
Naruto?
What the fuck was that all about?
It's just an anime word. It's literally just an anime word. It's not that
decided to name it Naruto before she even found out about the Gotron ferrets.
I guess.
In the chronology of the show, that's the way it's got to be, I think.
You're right. Maybe Summer's a big anime fan. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a couple. Like I thought that the Gotron. The Rick's head control unit now resembles a giant mansion palace that's very reminiscent of the Tony Montana place. And then but there again, like, I really was hoping when he goes, say hello to my little me, and he pulls out a Rick looking gun, I really hoped that that was going to lead to something besides what it did, which was less than nothing.
I mean, at least they tried to put in a joke with it being like a Rick gun.
Him saying hello to my little friend and whipping out a ridiculously large like Rick gun would have been, I think, 3 times funnier than pulling out a naked version of himself and going bang, 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 bang. I don't know. That was
say it was funny. Choice. I just said it was an attempted joke. An attempt was made. Yeah, the mafia guys, I wanted to talk a little bit about them because there's one that's clearly like Don Corleone, right?
Yep, that's fat Rick
whose head is exactly the same size as regular Rick. That was kind of funny. And then there's the Tony Montana
you're so
one.
Fat you're an optical illusion.
Yep. There's the Tony Montana one, which, you know, Scarface. There's the Sonny Corleone.
He's 100% Sonny from
he's wearing the open shirt with the cross necklace. Yeah. It's the suspenders. It's exactly him from
if he had hairy shoulders, scene. He would be a exact copy of him. Yeah,
for sure. And then there's what's his name? Little Ricky Wrap It Up.
Yeah. And I think that's a joke
Steve
about
Buscemi from Boardwalk Empire. I'm trying to figure out who he is.
I think it's just a joke based on like Tommy Two Times from Goodfellas that he's literally named after what he does, which is efficiently wrap up a scene.
Sure. You know, that's absolutely a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does it the first time and then like he does it the second time when he's killed and he's like, I'm all wrapped up, Sama. I thought that was, it's pretty funny. But he's like, he's not a exact one-to-one call, which maybe should have been.
I don't know. Everybody else seemed because to be, but
it's not like they used a Ricky Wrap It Up as like to killer effect. You know, they could have made him like I'd like to see a Fredo Rick. It's which is essentially it's Doofus Rick with a cowardly streak.
Okay. I mean, it wasn't the Yo-Yo Rick essentially a Fredo Rick.
Morty
was getting Fredo'd.
Yeah.
He's getting pushed to the side. He's like, I know he's getting Henry Hill'd. He's getting all the casino stuff too, but that's part of it, right? He's getting Fredo'd.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. He's getting, you know, I'm smart. I can do stuff too. There's a little bit of that in this Morty.
Yeah.
When Giant Space Baby showed up, he's diapered in the American flag, which, okay. They're controlling it Ratatouille style. He's wearing like some kind of hospital tag that says, identifies him as Weapon I, which I think is a Wolverine Weapon X joke, but I'm not sure exactly what the I means. Oh, incest, of course.
Yeah. Of course.
Jesus Christ, I figured it out here after watching this thing three times, working for 2 hours in the notes. As I'm sitting here staring my friend in my face, I just realized. And then speaking of obvious, there's a meta tag that's the 80085. That's the boobs joke.
Again?
Twice in one season. Yeah. I don't, like I said, I mean, you know, our community just fucking loves it. 69 and 420 jokes on Twitch.
Sure.
So like, I'm not saying that this, that I'm above like beating shit to the ground, but man, that's a lot of callback to a little joke.
Beating things into the ground. They really hit this incest baby stuff hard this episode. It wasn't just like, oh, out of nowhere, unexpectedly the incest baby comes back and they do this thing at the end. It was like all episode, right? Everybody was bringing it up, they were talking about it, and I was thinking is this just like hammering a joke that already isn't funny over and over again in some kind of like comedy torture sort of way?
I don't know, because it just depends on what you thought the writers thought the audience would think about the incense baby.
Right.
So like, you know,
that this way is getting madness.
This is like some Princess Bride, the Cini shit. It's like, oh, I knew you'd hate the incest baby, which means I'd make him three times more funny. And through the law of comedy torture, you would love him, which would make you hate him, which means that I would know. Yeah. I'm like, fuck that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like this is just, I think the writers thought the audience would love it, because like before and previous, because we've had fucked up shit before, like, you know, Beth and Jerry's psychic manifestation of their relationship escapes and kills a whole research lab full of marriage therapists. And that is something that they bond and fuck over. Like, it gets them hot that they're like, when they get Cronenberg, their society, their family is the strongest one to survive the process and thrive in some kind of Mad Max way. And there's been lots of times where they'll say like, yeah, well, we're the Smiths fam, kind of like putting their stamp on like a fucked up situation. And Rick had to like, that kind of moment, cheer moment, where he's like, the anime girl is saying, what the hell's wrong with you people? You just have a giant incest space baby in your back pocket. And he's like, welcome to the Smith family, as he kicks her in the face. I think that's supposed to be, and yet this is supposed to be the capstone or the latest stage of all those types of jokes. And because everybody hates the incest baby, it just didn't land.
Gotcha.
Like, if everybody, the incest baby is another one of those, oh, Rick and Morty is so fucking naughty, too naughty for their own goods, chuckle, chuckle, ha ha, then this gets the big cheer. But since everybody was kind of either squicked out or like, all right, well, like, I'm not in a moral panic about this, but what the fuck? What's funny about this? It just fell flat.
Where do you think the incest baby got the giant American flag for a diaper?
The U.S. government, clearly.
Made a giant American flag for its diaper?
Violating the U.S. code on flag. I mean, this is a flagrant violation, like a giant U.S. flag used to collect soil and feces and urine. That's blatantly
like
disrespecting the flag.
We need to look into this.
You know, Obama wear a tan suit and look at all the shit he got. This is a little bit beyond the pale, I thought. But I don't know. So we got that. We got the voiceover Aryans. What do you think of the stinger?
I like the stinger. The stinger is,
I thought the stinger
was
funny too.
Based humor. It's not exactly the Voltron thing. It struck me more as like a Pacific Rim type of thing, which all that is like balled up into one big thing, right? Godzilla.
100%. Yeah.
But yeah, the idea that like they're just trying to spread the cure for AIDS to other planets or dimensions, and we can't understand them when they come through because they turn huge and their language is all confused and they just shout and scream and we blow them away. Yeah, That was pretty good. That was probably the funniest part of the whole episode.
Yeah, like this is just an altruistic thing they're doing because no one returns from these missions. They got the cure for AIDS. Despite the cost, they got to go through and do it. And they're like, you know, chin up. It's not like you're going to get stripped of your clothes and turned into a giant screaming. And that's what happens. And then like when the thing starts, it's like, well, I got my mission. So he like clears his throat and it's like lemon juice, 4 bay leaves, a pinch. And then his head gets, well, I just thought that's funny. The cure for AIDS being lemon juice, 4 bay leaves, and a pinch of sea salt with some various other ingredients. I don't know. That's pretty, I thought that's pretty fucking funny.
It was. I do have questions. Like, if no one ever comes back, why are they continuing the mission? How do they know they didn't already succeed?
Wasn't that a problem we had with the Tomorrow War or the Future War or whatever the fuck it was called?
I had a lot of problems with the mechanics there.
Sure.
But this one, like, they have to.
30-second stinger.
They have to assume. They don't know that when you go through, right? They say they don't know when you go through, you become a huge screaming insect monster and you get your head blown off.
Sounds like it's a one-way trip. Like, they don't even know that, like, no one. They don't know that this is a fatal mission. They just know that no one returns from it because it's a one-way trip.
Right.
So I guess that's baked into it. Like,
so they just assume that something bad happened to them and continue on the mission?
No, maybe they assuming just assuming that AIDS is they don't cured. What is their assumption? So are they going to the same planet multiple times or are they going to a different planet each time? Because if it's the latter, then it's like you just send a missionary out and whether he spreads the good news or not, it's like, you know, you just assume go on to the next one. But
it could be.
Yeah, we need follow up. We need follow up on, how would they keep track of this? Is there some kind of like communications? Like, are they waiting 10,000 years to get a round trip signal back to be like, these people don't, I don't know. Or they get,
What if it's inverse time dilation or something? Like the dimension shit they're sending them to, the time runs so much slower that they haven't even like fully assembled themselves on the other side molecule by molecule yet. Maybe it'll take 100,000 years to deliver this message. Who knows?
That's also like the idea that AIDS is the universal disease,
right?
Like, as intelligent life continues to spawn and reproduce and blah blah blah, like eventually you're going to come with some, because we like fucking so much, you're going to like eventually you're going to have some kind of super virus.
Yeah,
that sexually spread, and this is just a plague on the universe. Except for these bugs, have got it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
These regular sized bugs. I thought it was funny.
It was.
For me, it was cap off like a medium funny episode. But you're calling this the worst of the season.
Yeah, I actively dislike this one.
Because to me, the worst one of the season was the incest baby, and it's like
Rick Dependent Spray.
Like I think that's the worst episode of Rick and Morty history. But then again, I think it's like a 5 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10, not a -3 out of 10. So your mileage may vary.
Yeah.
Shall we take a quick break and then get to feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We're back with some feedback. If you'd like to send us feedback on Rick and Morty season 5 or any kind of Rick and Morty topic, it's real easy to do so. Just send those emails to rickandmorty@baldmove.com. And we'll fish them out of the old portal soup. Yeah, that's what it is. First up is Nick from Sydney. It says, hey guys, I just wanted to drop a quick note about the discussion you guys had about the characters' traits getting more and more progressively exaggerated as time goes on. There's an actual term for this, Flanderization, named after the Simpsons character Ned Flanders.
Of course.
And he links to a Wikipedia article where they talk about the Flanderization in detail, like visual Flanderization, where it's like, you know, a character gets more and more extreme around a physical trait. Versus personality Flanderization. I knew I was onto something, but I didn't know that it actually had an industry accepted term for it. So thank you for sending that. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're starting to see the Rickification. Like, if this Rick wasn't the Rickest Rick, he's by the end of 10 seasons, he's going to be. You know, whatever we're left is going to be the Rickest Rick and Mortiest Morty, because they're just going to be continually distilled and, you know, smoothed over to like a rock and a tumbling machine here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Justin from the Outer Banks. So I got to this episode and your coverage late. This is last week's episode six. Because I'm with you on the AT-AT conversation. I thought you made good points all the way around, and ultimately I think it's a funny observation delineating people who probably read a lot of Star Wars stuff growing up and came with their own pronunciations versus folks that largely heard it spoken because it wasn't Star Wars stuff to read. I wonder if that's the case. Because, like, yeah,
there was Star Wars stuff to read. Well, it depends on how far back you go, right? I'm a kid of the 90s, and so there was a lot of Star Wars stuff to read for me.
See, I'm a kid of the late 70s, early 80s. So, like, I was there in the first wave. I was like six, seven when the Empire came out. I had to wait. I think I was like 16 before Heir to the Empire, the first Timothy Zahn book came out.
I can't remember the time that wasn't out.
Right. So like there's a whole, you know, like they had West End Star Wars D6 role playing games, and you had a couple like comic. There's a whole, you know, Marvel comics series and all that stuff. But like, yeah, my formative experience was here in, you know, AT-AT Walker, Storm and Echo Base. So it was kind of given to me. Also, he says, I'm probably not the first person to tell you that the FDR/Spider hybrid is also a subtle Star Wars reference. And he clips me to this YouTube link to explore. I don't know if you know this, and he shrouded this in spoilers, but I don't care. Darth Maul. Darth Maul, is he alive or dead?
I assume he's Star a Wars spider canon. President at this, like, based on this conversation. But
okay. Shit, I did this in the wrong order.
I hear he was pieced together at some point.
Apparently, when he fell down the fucking Nabooian shield reactor plant, somebody fished him out of there and stuck him in a spider chassis, and he's still going strong. Didn't he pop up at the end of Solo too?
Is he Grievous?
So like this is that? Oh my god, I don't think so. Okay. But this is now part of like Star Wars lore because of a Star Wars movie. You know, it's all well and good to be in a comic book or a cartoon, but when you got a Star Wars Lucasfilm movie talking about it, then it's good to go. But anyway, he said he wanted to know if we thought the writer's room is trying to drop a bunch of Star Wars stuff in as a sort of a poke and jab to Michael Waldron. Michael Waldron was the showrunner for the Thor series that we both quite liked. That just wrapped up. Something about Michael Waldron is he was an executive producer and writer on Rick and Morty up until season 5, where he jumped ship to go work for the Mouse. And he just signed on to pen a Star Wars movie for Kevin Feige. I don't know. I got to learn how to pronounce this guy's
it's
fucking
Kevin
name eventually. Yeah. Or maybe it's F-E-G-E. I'm not sure. But what do you think of the odds of, because here's the thing. I'm not convinced this is a Star Wars reference, like the AT-AT clearly was. But like this was a biological spider clone FDR thing, and those things are fucking legion. Like there was a spider hybrid in Half-Life. There was certainly one in Doom. It's a fairly, I think there was one in Gods of War. Like, you know, spider people are fairly rare and horrific, but not completely unheard of and uncommon, you know, thing. So I don't know that this was like an obscure Star Wars Legends reference, but like clearly there are a lot of Star Wars references, and I think yeah,
I mean,
like,
you're gonna
this
have,
writing room is
sorry, you're gonna have Star Wars references in a sci-fi show, right? I mean, it's definitive science fiction.
100%. And I think that this is the type of writing room that would like needle a former worker with like or tease them essentially with like some jabs at their property.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Like, yeah, I just don't know if this is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, the spider was created by the polio vaccine, right? Not like us like pieced together on a spider.
Yes, canonically,
chassis,
it's one of the horrifying side effects of the polio vaccines. Good thing we don't have to take it anymore. Good thing the legion of people who braved the Arachnid conversion took that bullet for us, and they eradicated disease, and we have to take don't have mess with that dangerous vaccine anymore. Thank God. but yeah, I don't know. I do think that here's what I'm really excited for, because this is going to be on for again 5 more seasons, and we're already seeing how like Rick and Morty is like the. Tom, what is it? The Katamarcy democracy or whatever. Like it's like the giant giant sticky ball that's just picking up cultural things as it goes and gains steam. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain, just like Waldron's Loki was heavily influenced by his time on Rick and Morty, I can't help but think that Loki and some of the Marvel stuff and some of the stuff they're doing like in DC with, you know, Harley Quinn and that series, that's not going to be an influence on Rick and Morty going forward. Mm-hmm. Just like Cosa Nostroid informed the Chicken Fingers, which informed the Gotron.
Right.
Chances of the incest baby coming back.
100%. I'm not getting fooled again.
I think it's 100. I actually unironically think it's 100%.
Yeah, I do too.
Think it's going to continue to be like a recurring character. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, you can't get Stephen Colbert's guy back. We're going to have this. We're going to get the incest baby in one fucking season, turn around twice. I don't know.
They're still so scared to do Cable. Like, you know, bring Meeseeks back, right? Bring back the things that people love. They're seemingly scared to do that because it might ruin the thing that people love about Rick and Morty, but yet they bring back the things that, you know, are risks, let's say. The new stuff that no one has tasted yet. I don't know. It's a little strange. What would you think about like a Meeseeks episode at this point, or at least like bringing them back into one of the episodes?
I would love to see that, honestly. Yeah, I would love to see them go back to, like, that's the thing. It's like, if you're so scared of new continuity that you trot out the incest baby to avoid treading on that, maybe it's time to bring out the Meeseeks. You know, just as a test, just to kind of try the waters out.
You're not worried about them ruining it?
No, I don't. I mean, that's, I'm trying to think of an instance where a shittier version of something has come out and ruined the original thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I still think Empire Strikes Back bangs.
Yeah.
Like a fucking pair of muddy hiking boots and a dryer. And yet Star Wars is wiped those muddy boots across my heart for the last decade or more. So yeah. I'm sure if I racked my brain, I could think of it, but like nothing is going to take away the original brilliance of the Meeseeks.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That episode will always be great. It's a matter of like, can they repeat the success of that if they did decide to bring back Meeseeks? I don't know.
Next episode, Returnal Friendshine of the Spotless Mind. Keep on looking ahead to see if there's an obvious interdimensional Cable thing to get excited for. But I don't know. This could be an interesting furtherance of the Morty Jessica saga.
Oh, all right.
Because he got like eternally time god friend zoned by her mm-hmm. at the end of that episode. And I wonder if this isn't like, you know, because that's what I think of when I think of Eternal Spot Sunshine. I think of relationships and them being over, but then on reflection, not wanting them to be over and, you know, having fun. Yeah, it's the whole thing of that movie. So I wonder if it's going to be that, or of course, you know, if you were expecting this to be a big statement about Neon Genesis Evangelion, a lot of people thought they would go into the stuff that has to deal with that source material, and they didn't. So like,
right.
I don't know. Maybe it's nothing. We'll find out. We'll find out next time, next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.
Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com.
If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at patreon.com/baldmove
to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @baldmove. See you next time.